Hello and welcome to the Building Tech Teams podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to hiring experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you and enjoy the show. Cool, so we've got Anna Shallon here. She is the Director of Recruitment and D&I at Frame.io, coming to us from New York. Anna, thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Awesome. Very much looking forward to the conversation. You were very diligent in your kind of note-giving exchange, so I have loads to dive into, which I really appreciate, by the way, because it's actually rare that I even get notes. So you're already one of my favorite guests with that.
That's good to know. I'm sure you say that to everyone, but still good to know.
I don't. You can listen to some of the other shows. But before we get into things, though, would you mind just giving the listeners, just for some context, I suppose, a bit of a sort of brief overview of some of your background and experiences?
Yes, of course. So I'm originally from Paris, France. I lived in London for a little bit and then moved to the US 8 years ago to pursue a music career at first, which was my background. And then I realized I didn't want to do that for the long run. And once I was able to get my paperwork in order and get a green card, I got my first job in marketing at Unilever and then transitioned into tech, where I worked. I've been working now for about 5 years in recruiting, and now I've been at Frame.io for a little under 2 years as the head of recruiting.
Amazing. Well, I mean, what an interesting journey. You made that seem all too simplistic. but yeah, an incredible journey. I likewise kind of went over to the States, so I kind of hopefully can relate in some sort of way to your experiences. But I can imagine that just kind of doing that, the very nature of making that commitment, I tend to find people who do that find their way somehow, because you're almost committed to just going and learning and putting yourself in an uncomfortable position. And I think there's so much value in just doing that. Anyway,
right? Yes, definitely. I completely agree with you. And one thing that I really enjoyed when I moved here is I knew I had to let go of probably anything I knew to be the truth, because this is a different culture, it was a different language. When I moved here, my English was all right, but definitely a little broken. And I thought it was just really humbling and really exciting to get to learn so many things I didn't know about, and learn to, again, forget about the things I knew in order to make space for the things I didn't know. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I'm sure that that's part of your kind of recruitment philosophy as well. Is I'd imagine you're kind of drawn towards people who are just kind of, I think my favorite way of putting it is being comfortably uncomfortable.
Yeah, it's about finding the right balance. I really like the analogy of there's the stretch zone and the panic zone. So it's just, how can you be in the stretching yourself just enough that you are uncomfortable and learning, but not so much that you're in the danger zone and you just don't know what's going on anymore.
When was the point when you kind of realized that, you know, you mentioned in the note that you kind of fell in love with recruitment. But when was that kind of realization that you felt, you know, perhaps because of your experiences, that it just felt like such a fit and something that you fell in love with? I'm sure there's various aspects, so feel free to go into them.
Yes, I think the most immediate moment where I felt like it was probably a good fit for me was when I started having conversations with candidates and realizing that I could help them decide what opportunities would be the best fit for them as a next step. I enjoyed that. And then the second aspect that then got me really excited is when I realized that I could have an impact in helping shape maybe a different landscape than traditional tech companies by having a bit more diversity. And that I realize that because I'm an untraditional candidate. I consider myself an untraditional candidate. At first, at least, I had a music background, no relevant experience. I didn't come from this country. Was just had no internship experience even. So pretty untraditional candidate. I had my picture on my resume because that's what we do in France. I learned that that's not something that is recommended here, but I think it just opened my eyes to all the things that probably are superficial and might clutter hiring managers or recruiters' judgments about a candidate, but are not actual predictor of someone's success. So I've tried to apply this with how I assess any candidate and how I coach hiring managers to assess candidates so we can give a shot to people who might be a good fit, even though it doesn't maybe come so easily from looking at the resume. And this is, then it gets to the whole, you know, unconscious bias, or some cases not unconscious, but biases. And I think the goal for us as recruiters or hiring managers is to be able to unclutter our judgment as much as possible so we can make the best hiring decisions possible. And then if we can do that, it naturally will result in a more diverse workforce anyway, because we're starting to open the door to any type of candidates. But I understand why the, you know, picture on the resume is an interesting example, because I'm witnessing it from the other side of, well, it literally does not mean anything. It's not it just means they might be from a different culture where that's what they were taught. It in no way, to have a picture or not a picture is a predictor to someone's success. And when it's said like this, most people would agree, but people have to make quick decisions. And I'm one of them too. When you're getting 1,000 applications a week, you have to try and hold on to something in order to be able to review a resume within 5 or 10 seconds. So I understand that unconscious bias is sort of necessary, but it's just thinking of what actually matters so that you can train yourself differently to not pick up on the things that don't matter, like maybe names. People have often biases with names. Or can you just remove that from the resume or the picture? Can you just forget about it because it doesn't matter? You can look at typo. Yes, that could be, that's probably a red flag that you can think about. But just, yeah, it's just about being a bit more deliberate around what actually matters and what doesn't, just so that we can avoid having biases sort of come up when it's actually going to be hurtful to the interview process.
Yeah. I think it's where the video platform people are coming from, I think it's an interesting concept, because I think that the very nature that, like, we're judging someone off, like, what is physically a PDF file, or, you know, whether you print it, don't print it, it's something that you're looking at, and you're judging by the nature of it, the document, like, unconsciously, you're judging the actual thing, right, that's in front of you, like, say, typos, all the rest of it. You know, some of the most brilliant people I've ever met, I had a dyslexic and terrible writers and spellers. I'd put myself into that category. I'm not brilliant, but I'm certainly not a brilliant speller or any of those things. But it doesn't really make any difference for me being able to kind of do my job and potentially, like, excel at it. So I think that there's a broken piece there in general, isn't there? But I think that's where it comes down to really great recruiters and people like yourself who are just willing to, like, be approach things optimistically and commit the time. For now, I can't really see any other ways around it. But, you know, we need to really value recruiters and people who are kind of willing to put themselves in the position, have that phone call, really get to know that person on a different level. For now, can you automate that? I don't know if you can. Yeah, I mean, maybe we can in the future. But I think that that's really ultimately what we need, is people who are just a bit more optimistic when it comes to reviewing people. And again, I understand time constraints, etc. But for now, that needs to be the attitude, and that's really where we need to set the bar for recruiters, internal recruiters, HR people alike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just about recognizing that we're all biased and removing the sort of guilt or judgment out of it, because this is not a testimony to how good or bad of a person someone is. We're all biased because we live in a world that is biased. And so all of the content that we're being fed since we're little, the education, the media, is all shaping how our biases are formed. So and depending on how we grew up, we might have different biases, but we all have some. And that again goes to the unconscious bias, which is it's unconscious bias is not always a bad thing. We're getting at all time about 11 million pieces of information, something like that. And our brain can only process 40 to 50. So we need the fast part of our brain and the unconscious mind to make some judgment for us. So for example, obviously, if a car comes towards you, for you to jump on the side is your unconscious mind, and it's necessary. It's a survival instinct. So in some cases, unconscious mind is really necessary to our survival, but it's just important to recognize that as a result, we also have a flawed and conscious mind that makes us have snap judgment on other things that are actually wrong. And once we can recognize that, I think it makes it so much easier to work around it without having the judgment piece. It's just knowing, like, okay, because of how I grew up, because of what I've seen on television, because of what my parents or school said, I think I'm a little biased towards X or Z. And then you can recognize it and work around it versus being in a denial, because I've also talked to people who said, I don't see gender, I don't see color, I don't see, and it's, I hope we can get to a world where that will be true, but it's my belief that at this point, it would be a little bit naive to say that, because the world doesn't function that way. So unless you live alone in an island, maybe, but otherwise, it's pretty impossible to be fully without any biases.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, you know, your kind of growth through the role as well. I wondered if you would mind talking about some of the biggest learnings that you feel, if there are a couple that come to mind through kind of your journey of, you know, working within recruitment.
Let me think about that. So I think the biggest learning within recruitment was around shaping interview processes, and that's still a work in progress. Obviously, no one has it perfect, otherwise no one would ever make mishires or hiring mistakes, but that's I think the biggest learning I've had so far, and that I'm still having now, is how can we shape an interview process that is not too long, that is efficient, and that removes biases and tests for all the things that actually will matter for the job. And that's difficult. Some of the things that I have found helpful is assignments. But I know, again, that's also something that some people will disagree on, because say that people who have time to do assignment, it might also be biased towards people who do not have children, and biased towards women who tend to do more chore at home. But based on my assessments, or based on my experience, I have found that assignments have been pretty effective at opening the door to different types of candidates. So for a lot of junior positions, what we do is we send an assignment as the very first step in the process, because that allows us to think a little bit less about the resume, because we know that the next step will be an assignment. And I think that's a big thing too, when people are looking at resumes, and candidates need to also realize that, is that when we're looking at a resume, to decide to move them forward means 20 to 30 minute phone call with a recruiter. And that's a lot of our time. So you have to hold on to something on the resume to decide who to talk to or not. But by having the assignment as the first step, you can be a lot more open to different types of resumes, And then instead of looking at the resume, you can look at the assignment and decide whether you want to talk to this person or not. And I have found this to be extremely effective to give a shot to untraditional candidate. And as a result, the teams for which we've done that are probably some of the most diverse team I have seen. And again, that's not positive discrimination. It was literally just opening the door to different types of candidates who would then have proven to be completely capable of doing this job through the assignment.
Amazing. Amazing. You know, second kind of question onto that is, this might be a bit of another one to think about, but, you know, when you kind of started looking back on things, what would be a piece of advice that you would give in a younger Anna?
Advice for a younger Anna, I think it would be to be both impatient and in it for the long run when it comes to the issues that I believed strongly in and that anyone else would believe strongly in. So what I mean by that is, know what battles to pick, but picking them for real. So when a hiring manager is difficult, or I had hiring managers who valued school very heavily, and I was, when you're junior in your career, it's hard to know what battle to pick, but I thought, this seems like an important one, and I think I can make a good case for it. So I was pretty nervous. I probably delayed it more than I should have. But looking back, I think if you do your research and are able to present a solid, rational case as to why something matters or doesn't. So that's the main advice I would give, is making sure to know what matters to you and then build a very strong, rational case that you can present to hiring managers, because then hopefully they should be able to listen. And if none of them are, maybe you're not working at the right place and you should go somewhere else.
Absolutely. And, you know, now at this point in your career, you're obviously involved and you're super passionate about, you know, diversity and inclusion issues. For people who perhaps might be interested themselves to take part, get involved, what is the kind of the simple things that people can do to perhaps support this movement and you know, support some of the things that we've touched on today in this podcast?
So here are some bullet points around what I think are tangible steps that anyone can take to improve diversity and inclusion in their workplace. One is, they should get buy-in from the top by making just a simple argument as to why it matters, and hopefully they get it. Again, if they don't, I would say they should probably not work there. And I would even advise that if diversity and inclusion is important to you, to ask that question as part of the interview process to see if this place is going to be the right fit for you. Because if that's important to you and you're working somewhere where the leaders don't care about it, it's going to be very difficult. So that's my first advice. Once you're somewhere where hopefully people are generally on board, they're just not sure how they can help, I would say step one is just removing the unnecessary requirements. So whenever you kick off a new position, it's really looking at the job description and the requirements and thinking, does this person really need to be great at Excel? Does this person really need to speak three languages? And just starting to question every requirement until you've narrowed it down to hopefully only a few, and a few that are truly essential. The second one is to talk about biases. So here we train every new hires on unconscious bias training. And I think that's really important, again, to remove the judgment from it and for everyone to recognize that it's a real thing and work around it. And then there are easy things that are possible to do, depending on what applicant tracking system you're using. But if you're using Greenhouse, or if you're using a support software like Hired, you can hide names. You can be able to review the resumes without people's name on it. So that also is a helpful tool. Then the third piece would be to source diverse pool of candidates. Because the idea of all of this is to be able to consider as broad of a pool of candidates as possible in order to make the best decision. So again, it's not positive discrimination. It's not to be confused with that. It's just giving opportunities to a broader pool of candidates in order to make the best decision possible. The fourth piece would be the assignment early on, as I was mentioning before. If it's possible to send an assignment as a very first step, it'll make it easier to let candidates that maybe have a more untraditional resume to move to the next step without committing to a 30-minute phone screen. So if there's a simple assignment that can be done. And then having a diverse interview panel. So again, that's an easy step, but one of the common things that I think are really easy, even if your current workforce is not really diverse, is to never have an all-male panel. Because to me, that's a really easy thing to avoid. Hopefully there's one woman at your organization. And obviously, ideally, it would be more 50-50 and having also race and ethnicity diversity and every other type of diversity. But at least this would be, to me, the minimum. And then having wrap-ups where you have a diverse interview panel, you had unconscious bias training, and hopefully then you can have a productive conversation on the candidate's performance with someone external. So I'm sitting obviously on all of the wrap-ups, and I can call out someone who will say, I don't know, I just didn't feel this person. They're just, I don't know, there's just something. And then you can probe them, but tell me more, like, what is it exactly? In what way was this person not be able to do the job? Like, you can help remove that sort of gut feeling and just, you know, vibe or, you know, all of the things that interviewers can sometimes rely on that, again, as we know, is not always reliable because we have flawed unconscious biases. So those would be the main bullet points I would say is removing the unnecessary requirements, trying to have to hide names as much as possible, sourcing a diverse pool of candidates, have an assignment early on, having unconscious bias training for all of your workforce, and having a diverse interview panel.
Awesome. Anna, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for taking the time and really well articulating all of your points today. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It was really a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturers Voice Slack group. See you next time.